Spring into reading this season with the Biblio Lifestyle 2024 Spring Reading Guide. In this season's guide, I've handpicked 21 of the best new books and I've organized them across 6 categories. So whether you're looking for a romance novel that will give you a happily ever after, a thrilling mystery to keep you guessing, or an immersive historical fiction book, this guide has a book or 3 or 7 just for you. Now, if 21 books sounds like too much for you, there's a minimalist reads list in the guide, which includes a list of 6 must-read books from across genres. But wait, that's not all. The Spring Reading Guide also includes fun recipes, spring activities, and lifestyle tips. So head on over to springreadingguide.com and download your copy of the guide. That's springreadingguide.com and download your free copy of the 2024 Spring Reading Guide. So download your free copy and discover your next favorite book. Happy reading! Hello, I'm Victoria from Biblio Lifestyle, and you're listening to the Reader's Couch podcast, the show that will help you bridge the gap between living a full and busy life to one where you're reading, learning new things, and having fun. Today on the couch, I'm so excited to welcome author Leanne Toshiko Simpson to talk about her novel, Never Been Better. Never Been Better is a comedic and touching story about Dee, a woman with bipolar disorder navigating love and friendship. In the novel, we get to know more about Dee, and we learn that she becomes best friends with Matt and Misa when they met each other in a psych ward. They even become known there as the Three Musketeers. Now, Dee is also secretly in love with Matt, and things go off the rails when she receives Matt and Misa's wedding invitation. So Dee makes a plan to derail the nuptials of her two best friends during their destination wedding in Turks and Caicos. So this novel is about mental health, love, and friendships, all packaged in a funny and refreshing story set in the Turks and Caicos Islands. But before we set off to the Turks and Caicos and into my lovely chat with Leanne, pretty please take a few seconds to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, leave the show a 5-star rating, and write me a review. Now, if you don't know what to write in the review, just give me a 5-star rating and tell me what episodes were your absolute favorites and what genres you'd like me to read and cover more here on the show. So, thanks in advance. And now onto the episode with author Leanne Toshiko Simpson. Hi friends, welcome again to The Reader's Couch. I'm your host, Victoria Wood, and here on the couch with me to talk about her new book, Never Been Better, is author Leanne Toshiko Simpson. Hi Leanne, welcome to The Reader's Couch.
Hi Victoria, thank you so much for having me.
Yay! I'm so excited to have you here. Absolutely loved your book. Can't wait to talk more about it. But before we get into it, I mean, how are you feeling? This is your debut novel. How exciting is this for you? How nerve-wracking maybe? What's the experience been like?
Oh my goodness. Well, I first wanted to write a mental health rom-com of sorts about 10 years ago when I was really going through a hard time and was very, very depressed. So I think that it's been such a long journey that I almost can't believe that it's out in the world. But I am really excited to have hopefully people read it who need a story full of hope and laughter and a little bit of wisdom about mental health. So that's the most exciting part for me.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I hope, again, more readers read this book because it really checks so many boxes. It does give you the mental health, but it does give you the friendships. It's light, it's fun. And yes, it checks so many boxes. But before we get into the book, I want readers to hear straight from you. Tell me about your book, Never Been Better. What's your elevator pitch? And what can readers expect when they pick up a copy?
Yes, readers can expect not to know the ending because I didn't know it myself while I was writing it. It's about a love triangle between three friends who meet in a psychiatric ward. And a year later, two of them are getting married and the third wheel is going to the wedding to maybe bring it down. And it's a story about love and recovery and that feeling of being left behind. So it's a lot to look at, and I'm excited for people to dive in. It's a bit of an unexpected story.
Yes, I can see that for sure. But I love that it was unexpected. I think that was also part of the fun of reading this book too. But let's talk about the characters. So the friend who is showing up to essentially upend things with the wedding that's happening is Dee. Now, Dee has two best friends, Matt and Misa. They all met while they were at hospital, getting the mental health care they needed. And like you said, two of them are getting married, which is Matt and Misa, and the third wheel is Dee. Now, tell us about Dee. Let's start with her, who she is as a character, what's going on. She has quite the story before she shows up to Turks and Caicos.
So Dee is the main character of the book, and she's in a bit of a tough spot in her life where she's come out of the psychiatric ward and she's seeing everyone around her find success and move their lives forward. Well, she's feeling really stuck, and I think she hinges a lot of that on the feeling that she should have been the one getting married to Matt and not Misa. But at the same time, she holds so much love in her heart for both of them since they were the three musketeers of the psych ward. So she's trying to get her life together. She's trying to do the right thing, but sometimes she has good intentions and poor execution.
I love that good intentions, poor execution line because that perfectly sums up Dee. But then we have the other best friends, Matt and Misa. Tell us about them.
Yeah, so Matt is an aspiring musician who's maybe giving up on his dreams to seem a little bit more respectable to Misa's wealthy parents. And he's a laugh at everything, a little bit too cavalier for his own good, very warm-hearted teddy bear that you can't really help but like. And his partner, Misa, is a really empathetic and intuitive and problem-solving kind of person, someone that you'd always want in your corner. But sometimes because she's so busy taking care of everyone else, she's a little bit unwilling to look after her own needs. And so sometimes she rubs Dee the wrong way because she always feels like Misa's trying to manage her, even though Misa's just trying to be a good friend. And what I loved about writing Dee and Misa is that I'm biracial. I'm mixed Japanese and French Scottish. And it was interesting to write through my experiences as a biracial person through these two characters with very different cultural contexts and the way that they learn to bridge the gap. So you see a lot of Misa's family in the story. And I think it adds a lot of nuance to the way that character evolves over the course of the book. And she was one of my favorite people to write, honestly.
I love hearing that because I enjoyed Misa's story as well. And I do want to touch on her parents because they were quite noteworthy too. But let's bring it back to Dee. So Dee has bipolar disorder. Dee was also at the psych ward when she met Misa and Matt. Tell me about your decision to write about bipolar, write about friends meeting at a psych ward, and your intentions with this novel.
Yeah, you know, I've been lucky over the years to meet other folks who have that experience of being in a psychiatric ward. I mean, it's a hard thing to talk about, but when you do find someone who's lived through that, I think you jump like seven levels of friendship because it's such a specific and unique experience. And a lot of people that I've spoken to about this have really strong relationships that they built in that space, like friends that they just remember forever. Or even I know some people who have fallen in love in that context, although this story is very different than theirs. And I really wanted to write about bipolar disorder from different perspectives because it is experienced differently by different people. And also, I think it's an illness that's very much misunderstood and dramatized when a lot of it is just learning how to recognize your symptoms and ask for help when you need it. So I wanted to show it in a way that was almost like an everyday experience rather than a crisis, which is most often when you see mental illness narratives going.
You are absolutely right. I think that's another reason I really enjoyed this book. But with that said, I love the different angles as well, because you're right, people react to things differently. And Misa, for example, she was hiding her illness from her wealthy parents. Tell me about that decision and more about Misa and her thought process in doing that.
Yeah, I wanted to write MISA as a reflection of what I had experienced in my community. I've been a mental health advocate for years. And when I brought a lot of my knowledge to like Nikkei spaces, so Japanese diasporic spaces, I realized that it was a lot harder to approach some of the topics in the way that I had done through clinical language or anything like that. And so I wanted to offer a different way to track back that idea of mental well-being through some of MISA's family history and the different ways her family feels comfortable talking about wellness and unwellness. So it was a really, it was one of the most challenging parts of the book to write because, of course, I don't want to reinforce stereotypes about Asian communities because, I mean, there's especially Asian women are often written quite poorly. But at the same time, I wanted it to be accurate to some of the, you know, some of the generational silences that are often talked about within Japanese Canadian context. And so I think I try to show MISA's parents in a couple different lights, and especially MISA's mom, thinking about the idea of legacy. What do we pass on? Our ancestral knowledge, the history. The younger generations feel a lot of pressure to carry that forward. But sometimes the ways in which we feel we can do that are different than the ways that have been done before. So I think MISA spends a lot of her time grappling with the fact that she really does want to make a difference in mental health and isn't quite sure how to tie that to, you know, the more tangible history of incarceration in North America.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think that's also in contrast to Dee, who sees it in a completely different light, because to be quite frank, I understood Dee sometimes being a bit frustrated with MISA because MISA didn't show up in a way where Dee thought, you know, she should. So we have that nuance with friends where someone really close to you who understands your situation maybe better than most, but also the layer of expectation there, because MISA just wants her to essentially show up in the same way she does when it comes to her illness. So tell me about that dynamic between the two in terms of expectation and friendships.
Yeah, for sure. And I think their relationship was, I mean, one of the most special things to write, because sometimes if you are loud and outspoken about mental health, that's really great, but not everyone is. And so sometimes these misunderstandings were actually part of Dee's, you know, lack of context, because she hadn't really gotten to know MISA in the way that she should have. And the more she encounters her family and some of the kind things she does for other and her own special relationship with Matt, I think that she comes to understand that maybe she's the one that has misunderstood. And maybe MISA was trying to be a good friend to her all along and Dee couldn't understand the ways in which she shows love. And I think that's kind of a theme for the whole novel. It's a lot of people trying to care for one another and sometimes the care not being delivered in the way that the person wants or expects. And sometimes with mental illness, if you're struggling, people around you are trying to help you and they're trying to rally around. And sometimes it can be so hard to see that when you're in a dark place. And so that self-awareness that Dee develops and MISA develops over the course of the story, I think really brings those friendship threads together.
Right, right. Absolutely. Now, I want to bring it back to the main premise of the book, which is a trio of friends who met each other in a psych ward. They were the Three Musketeers. Two of them are getting married, Matt and MISA, and Dee is showing up to this destination wedding happening in the Turks and Caicos, essentially, to upend things, because the truth is, Dee loves Matt. Now, on her journey to the Turks and Caicos, she drags along her sister, Tilly. Tell us about Tilly and the contrast with Dee and her tagging along for this trip.
Well, I think that every bad decision you make needs a good sidekick. And so Tilly is that person. She is there cheering Dee on, even when Dee is doing the most questionable things possible, but also is a grounding place for Dee when she's feeling her lowest. So Tilly, I think, is was such a fun character, right? Because she has so much range. She is in your face in one moment and so soft and so kind and gentle to her sister in the other. And her protectiveness sometimes is maybe a bit enabling, but we love her anyway. And she definitely has the best one-liners throughout the whole book.
Yes, I love Tilly. I think Tilly was for sure one of my favorites. She just brought this levity. Sometimes she's serious, sometimes overprotective. You're right, a bit enabling, but you can't help but love her. So that was just absolutely, she was just a great character, just really, really great support and a sidekick for sure. So I really appreciated how you balanced the funny bits, the informative bits. I think it was just a great balance of friendship, comedy, mental health. There's a bit of chaos in there as well. And I loved that we had a destination wedding. So this is set in the Turks and Caicos. And for that reason, I want us to play a little game of what to do in Turks and Caicos, because who doesn't love a good vacation? Who doesn't love a good destination wedding? And the one thing the Turks and Caicos is known for are their beautiful waters. So I'm going to solicit you for some recommendations for my listeners about what to do in the Turks and Caicos. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yay. Okay. So first we're going to start with some either or, what would you rather do, but also what would Dee rather do? So I want you to kind of think about your main character. Tell me your personal responses, but also what Dee would do. So would Dee and Tilly, because I want to throw in Tilly too, would they rather take a boat cruise or take a snorkeling cruise? What would they rather?
Well, I think that a boat cruise would be more the vibe, because it's very hard to balance a drink in your hand while you're snorkeling. And that was a lot of their vacation. So I would say a very lovely boat cruise where hopefully you see some whales. There's lots of whales around.
Yeah, a nice boozy boat cruise. Hopefully we see some whales. Okay. Are we going to kayak or paddleboard in the wetlands, or are we snorkeling just off the beach?
Well, I do love a good kayak scene. The fun thing about kayaking in Turks is there's actually a part of the island that has a bunch of beautiful canals. Like, it's almost like kind of like a Venice style kind of thing. Just a very, very small area near leeward. And there's such beautiful homes there and some really nice groves and a lot of iguanas. So highly recommend the kayaks.
Yay. We love a good kayak. Okay. So are we going to parasail over a bay, or are we going to visit a national park and maybe walk around?
You are absolutely not getting Dee, who is the most anxious person on the planet, into a parasail. But one thing that I love about Turks and Caicos is all of the beaches are protected land, right? So they're not, even though there's hotels along some parts of the beach, they're not, the land's not owned by the hotel. So anyone can walk along the whole Grace Bay, which is so, so cool and very different from other resorts where everything is gated.
Yes, yes. I think I like that, because you're right. Most places are gated. So it's really cool that it's different in the Turks and Caicos. Okay. Are we going horseback riding, or are we going jet skiing?
So I'm going to tell you the thing about horseback riding that no one tells you in the glamorous photos. I have done it once for my sister's birthday, actually. The horses poop in the water while you're walking through the ocean. And there, you're in a line of horses. And so it floats. It floats. It's around. Would not recommend. But the horses themselves are beautiful. And yeah, if when you're on land, it's amazing.
Yeah, but otherwise it doesn't sound too fun. So I think I too will pass. Okay, last one. Do you want to drive around the island and explore, or are we going shopping?
Well, I will tell you that, especially for Dee and Tilly, who, you know, don't go on vacations pretty much ever, the shopping might be a little high price for them. But one of the great things about the island is that you can go explore different parts. Like Chalk Sound is really beautiful. My personal favorite is Sapodilla Bay, which is so shallow that you can just walk out for ages. Grace Bay is, of course, where a lot of the resorts are. And there's also really wonderful local spots, because as much as like a lot of the downtown core is built around tourists, there's a really vibrant and thriving community that comes out for different local events, like music, like they have music nights, or Fish Fry, which is mentioned in the book, is like a kind of a cookout marketplace space that I actually saw the Kardashians at one time.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was funny because everyone was just hanging out and they had like so many cameras. It was wild. I couldn't believe it.
Oh my gosh. I guess they were filming maybe?
Oh yeah, I think it's a very Turks and Caicos is very popular for celebrity visits. You can actually like take a tour of through jet ski of a lot of the celebrity places, which is really interesting.
Right. No, that makes sense. Now that I think about it, I think quite a bit of reality shows are filmed there too.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I always thought, like, it's funny, I never spend any time on islands. Like, my family stayed home a lot, and I hadn't really been anywhere like Turks and Caicos before. And I had started writing the book slightly before meeting my husband, who's has the connection to the island. And so it was really special to write about a very specific place that has such a unique history and is so, so beautiful to visit.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Love that connection piece is there. But before we get off the topic of Turks and Caicos and seeing that you've been, what is the first thing you have to drink, or what would you recommend people order off a menu when they touch down to Turks?
Oh my goodness. So one of my favorite places to go when I first get to Turks is a bar called Somewhere. It's right on the beach around Grace Bay. And they have very powerful rum punch, I have to say, and live music. And it's just the most beautiful view. And you can watch, you just watch the waves. And yeah, it's one of my favorite spots for sure. And everyone just hangs out there. It's very community oriented.
That's awesome. I love when you mentioned a fish fry, because I love a good fish fry. So tell me, what would you order off the menu? What's something you would eat right away, or something you're maybe hankering for? And when you touch down, you're like, yes, I'm getting this.
Yeah, one of the dishes that Turks is famous for is conch. So you can do a salad, you can do tacos, you can do fritters. I've actually seen someone, I've been to the place where they harvest a lot of the shells. I've watched them do it, which is really interesting. And yeah, that's one of the big things to try on the island, which is really cool.
So for someone who's never been and they're visiting for the first time, where would you recommend that they stay? Do they stay like in a certain area, a hotel, an Airbnb? What would you recommend?
I think Turtle Cove has a lot of really nice places. And my family actually went for the first time recently, and they stayed at Ocean Club, which was really lovely. But for first-time visitors, the thing you have to do is visit Pop Cake Place, and this is in the book as well. And you can volunteer to walk puppies, so you help them socialize, and often they're adopted off-island to homes all over the world. And it's such a special experience. And my sister actually went home with a puppy named Peaches when we were there in December. So we have a little piece of Turks and Caicos in our family too.
Yay for Peach's adoption. Love it. Okay, someone is going shopping. They want to bring something back home to remind them of their time in Turks. What do you recommend they buy?
There's a really beautiful local store called Wellington Collections, and they make a bunch of different jewelry and kind of just nice little things out of sand from the beach. And it's local owned. The stuff is beautiful. I have a really nice ornament that I hang on my tree every year. It reminds me of a much warmer Christmas than I'm getting up in Canada. And they are really, really wonderful. And you can actually find them at Fish Fry as well.
Yay. Again, so you get the fish fry, but you also get a token to bring back home. Okay, so the last thing I'd love to know is, what would you recommend for someone visiting Turks, they're on a budget, what activities would you recommend they do?
Okay, if you're on a budget, one of the best places to stay is actually the Providenciales golf course. And you may even see Drake, because he golfs there a lot. It's one of the best places to stay. It's just across the road from the beach. I've stayed there myself. And yes, walking pot cakes is amazing. The Grace Bay Club on Fridays has a really wonderful happy hour where everything is half off. And that's where I sat at the Stag and Doe scene from the novel. It's got all these beautiful hanging basket lights. Like, there's an outdoor fireplace, an infinity pool. It's really something special. And they bring in the DJ every week to play some music so you can celebrate. So that's one of my favorite things to do. And yeah, I think those are some of the best ones. Oh, and also brunch at Bay Bistro is also wonderful. And they've homemade ice cream, and it's so delicious.
Oh, I love homemade ice cream. I mean, that sounds all amazing. So thank you so much for playing the game and providing us with such fabulous recommendations.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope, I know it's sometimes a hard place to get to. I'm very lucky to have gotten to know it so well, but it is really, really beautiful. And the community there is wonderful as well.
Yes, yes, it's amazing. Okay, so let's get into your writing life real quick. I know this is your debut, but are you planning any other books? I mean, I felt you brought such depth, but fun and balance. And like I said at the beginning, this book checks so many boxes. What more can we expect from you?
I think I'm really committed to writing kind of unusual love stories in a way. And so I'm working on a new book that thinks a lot about the relationships we keep after a breakup. You know, sometimes you date someone for 4 or 5 years, you spend all this time with their family and friends, and then, you know, that relationship ends and suddenly you can feel a little unmoored. And I do feel like myself through breakups in the past, I've had a little bit of trouble letting go. And so I'm interested in the dynamics of those relationships, like months and years after the rupture, and what those look like going forward.
Oh my gosh, I would love to read that, because I am that person too. And it's almost like you're not just separating from the person, but it's the family, the friends you all had together. It's a whole thing.
Yes, my ex-boyfriend's mom came to my wedding. And that's a very specific fact about myself. And I love her and I adore her and I respect her so much. But I don't have much of a relationship with my ex. And I think that's just one example of the many ways those kind of things can be tricky to navigate.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Wow. Okay. So you have to come back when that book is fully fleshed out and realized. So one, of course, I have to read it first, but then so we can talk about it, because this is something I'm invested in. Like, I am sold. You have your first reader.
A book like that will be very messy as well. And that's my favorite kind of story to write, because it's a more accurate reflection of how we live. We make a lot of mistakes. We have regrets. But if we don't learn to laugh through them, what are we going to do?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's so rooted in reality too, because I guarantee you there are people out there like us who have a hard time, you know, with the breakup and separating and then maintaining relationships, and what does navigating that look like? So yeah, I am very invested. Again, I'm reader number one. I can't wait. This is so exciting. But looking back, I mean, now you have never been better out there in the world. I'm super excited about book two. Can't wait for that one. If you could tell your younger self anything looking back, what would you tell her?
Well, I remember when I was in grade 6, my parents took all of my books and put them in a box because I kept reading and not talking to real people. And I would love to tell that girl, because I was real sad when that happened, that, you know what? Books aren't a bad thing to spend your time with. I think that I loved reading so much that writing became kind of natural to me. I wanted to tell my own stories. And I'm lucky that I get to do that now, especially after a lot of the mental health issues that I've lived through. I mean, I know so many people who are so brilliant, have such great ideas. And sometimes mental illness takes away your ability to finish stuff. And even for me, this book took, over 6 years in the actual writing process. And so I feel very lucky to have been well enough to finish.
Oh my gosh, I love that message to your younger self. And I have to say, some of my best friends are fictional characters. So I'm just going to leave that one there. Let's get into your reading life, though, because I know we're here to chat about your book, Never Been Better. And we had so much fun talking to X and Keikos and excited about your new book, your next book. But what was the last book that you finished reading that you'd now recommend?
Oh my goodness. Well, I am currently reading Pride and Joy by Louisa Onome, and I love it. The premise is amazing. It's about a Nigerian family whose matriarch passes, and they are quite convinced that she's going to come back to life. And so they invite everyone to take part in that. And the protagonist is just trying to navigate that whole situation. And I think she's just done it with such tenderness and comedy and beauty. So really excited about that one. And I also, you know, I'm a really big fan of Alyssa Sussman's work. So I'm really looking forward to Totally and Completely Fine, which comes out later this year and is connected to her really stellar book, Funny You Should Ask, which of course is kind of based on that very chaotic Chris Evans interview that came out with GQ.
Yes, 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 for sure. What would you say was your favorite childhood book that you can remember?
You know what? I was thinking about this the other day, and I had a book called The Flower Girl memorized when I was young. I could recite the whole book at family parties. And it's also about a flower girl who almost ruins a wedding. So it's funny to think about writing a book in which a wedding is also in peril as an adult. And I don't know, maybe that rubbed off on me a little bit.
Maybe it did. And again, I just found something else we have in common. I didn't realize it then, but I guess now as an adult, I could say that was our party trick, which is we could recite a book by heart to anyone who could listen, because I did that. I for sure did that.
That's amazing. No way.
My mom told me when I was really little, the first book I did that with, and she was convinced, she's like, there's no way she must have memorized it. And then I would just obviously put the book aside and just, you know, blab it off. It was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the British version.
Good one.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that was my party trick.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly I was destined to read and talk about books. Even from that time. But what books are you looking forward to reading in the year ahead?
I just received an advance galley of Four Weekends and a Funeral by Ellie Palmer. And I just think, I love the premise, which is that the protagonist, you know, her relationship ended, but I guess her ex didn't tell anyone and he dies unexpectedly and she's forced to pretend that they're still dating to make his family happy at the funeral. And at the same time, she's asked to kind of clean up his stuff with his very grumpy friend. And so it's fake dating, but the ex is not with us. So a very unique premise. And I think that Ellie has such a really great knack for humor and for a lot of, you know, empathy and tender moments. So I'm really, really looking forward to finishing that one.
Yay, amazing. So another thing we love on the show is we love our indie bookstores. We are big fans and supporters of them. So tell me about some of your favorite local indies.
Oh, well, in Toronto, we have so many amazing ones to choose from. Closest to me is Queen Books, and they'll be selling at my launch tonight, which is amazing. They have such a good book club as well. They recently had Monica Heisey, who wrote Really Good Actually, which is another one of my faves. They had her in for the book club, and the store was packed, let me tell you. I've never seen a book club that popular. And also, I live in Greektown, and so along the Danforth, there's so many amazing shops, and Book City is one of them. I visited there today to do a little signing. So they're so wonderful, and they have such a neighborhood spirit, and I'm lucky to live in walking distance of both of these stores.
That is amazing. Bookstores are just such great anchors in our community, and I love when a book club is packed, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it's not every day you get an author to come hang out with you while you talk about their book. But yeah, it was really special.
Yeah, yeah, I can only imagine. So getting back to your book, Never Been Better, and kind of wrapping things together. I mean, I know you've done your job, you've written it, you've given it to us. But in an ideal world, what are you hoping readers might think or feel or discussions they might have after they've turned the very last page?
I really think that I wrote this book with people living through mental illness in mind. But I think one of the things I didn't think about as much was that people who are supporting their loved ones, they can learn so much from this book. And I've already had a bunch of people message me and thank me for including a lot of stuff that they never thought of before. And so I hope that it's a conversation starter. I hope that the lighthearted format makes mental health more accessible. And I really, really hope that people who have had the experience of going through dark times and wondering if things would ever get better, I hope that this book gives them some hope, because I mean, the tides do turn and we get better every single year at living our lives and knowing who we are. And I couldn't have imagined finishing this book when I was first diagnosed at 17, but I'm 31 now and I couldn't imagine not going through this process now. And I'm so lucky to be here and to be able to share this story.
Leanne, I am so happy you're here. I'm so happy you wrote this story, because I truly feel it will touch so many lives. This book is hopeful, but it's also funny. It's chaotic in all the best ways. Friendship is at the center. Love is at the center. And honestly, it's just a really, really good time. And we learn so much in this, you know, lighthearted and just incredibly accessible format. So I just want to thank you, one, for writing this book, but also thank you for coming on the show and speaking with me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for your wonderful reading of the book. It's so nice to chat with someone who really gets it. Like, it is a weird book and it's a funny book, but sometimes, you know, it's nice to talk with people who know how to laugh through tough stuff too. So I appreciate that you're able to bring all these topics together here.
I appreciate you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Reader's Couch podcast. Please subscribe to the show, share it with a friend, and take a few seconds to leave a rating and review. Until next time, stay lounging, stay reading, and whenever you're in doubt, go straight to your local bookstore or library. Thanks again for listening, and happy reading.